It's the Audio Drama Production Podcast, episode 98. A warm welcome to listeners old and new as we embark on the first of a few very special shows to mark our 100th episode, which, if my math skills are every bit as sharp as they were at school, is only 2 episodes away. My name's Matthew, and you won't be hearing much from me on this episode because I've basically got some other audio drama creators to do my job for me. A couple of months ago, we put out a call asking you 3 different questions. Knowing what you do now, what advice would you give to yourself before you got started making audio drama? How do you go about scaring your listener? And how do you make your listener laugh? And it's the subject of laughter, being funny, and writing comedy that we're going to take a look at in this episode. There's some fantastic insights here from a broad range of very talented people. So let's kick things off by heading to the audio drama capital of the world, Boston.
This is Alexander Danner of Greater Boston.
And this is Jeff from Greater Boston.
You can find our show online at greaterbostonshow.com.
I always find that humor works best when you're playing with expectations. So one of the things that we like to do in Greater Boston is take familiar things and kind of mix them together. For example, you know, in our show, we have this entire city being proposed as existing inside a subway system. So there's going to be homes and businesses and public parks and schools and all sorts of things that you'd normally find within the city. And we're going to cram them into what you'd normally think of as, you know, a subway system. And we think this is kind of funny, and hopefully other people do too, because it plays with things that people already have a good idea of. It plays with things that people know. People know how cities work. They know how cities look. They know how subway systems work. They know how subway systems look. And if you take those two familiar concepts and mash them together, it creates something really unexpected and kind of plays with expectations and converts expectations. And that's a really large-scale concept for our particular show. On smaller scales, I kind of like to do the same thing. For example, in episode 7, there's a scene where someone is getting communications via pneumatic tubes. And pneumatic tubes are kind of a outdated concept just by themselves, but people have a good understanding of what they are, I think. But when I was writing the episode, I really liked the idea of someone getting food delivered to them via pneumatic tube. And I had this idea of this like tuna sub, which is just, I think food is funny in and of itself. So there's something that can always be a little bit of humor, food. Like I find food just kind of funny. And I find a lot of humor can be derived from food. Just the image of a tuna sub I find somewhat amusing. I don't know why, but just the idea of like someone eating it or just the idea of it by itself amuses me. I guess I'm easy to please. But the idea of the tube being the thing that carries the food to the recipient really made me laugh. And, you know, I wrote this whole thing about tuna tubes kind of going through the system of the pneumatic tubes.
Yes, I've sent plenty of tuna subs up the tube before. One got stuck once, and the office reeked of rotting tuna for a month. Had to pay someone to hose out the tube. Took 3 weeks to get the job done. Boss still orders them up the tube, though. Loves his tuna, that mysterious wizard weirdo.
This takes two familiar things as well. The pneumatic tube system, which is designed to send and receive messages, and food, which of course isn't designed to be sent through tubes. So that's sort of how I kind of tried to play with two familiar things and then mixing them together to create humor. And I think this is especially effective for audio because you need to have images that people can imagine in their minds. And suggesting familiar things and mashing them together is a good way to do that and provide some humor, I think.
For me, the key to making an audience laugh is to remember that humor comes from largely the same material that drama comes from. There's a lot of humor to be found in the ways that characters react to the bad things that happen in their lives. In real life, people have a sense of humor about tragedy. They have a sense of humor about their own failings. And I think it's essential for characters to have that same sense of humor about themselves. And a lot of times people will do absurd, funny, strange things as a simple coping mechanism. So I like to think about, well, I was going to say I like to think about funerals, but I wouldn't say I like to think about funerals. But in our show, we had an episode set in a funeral. We had 3 eulogies in a row with people exploring the absurdity of the man who had died, this man who they loved, but could still see the ways he was an unusual and sometimes difficult and sometimes infuriating person. And one of the eulogies was by his best friend, who is an alcoholic, who fell off the wagon in response to his friend's death. And so he is dealing with a relapse into alcoholism as he's dealing with the death of his best friend. And much of his eulogy revolves around watching little robots make watches. And he gets very fixated on this mechanical process and on finding some meaning in this ridiculous, unrelated process.
All those little robot arms with robot fingers, synchronized, synchronous, put in a cog, put in a gear, put in some other mechanical part. I don't know. Clocks are confusing.
It's absurd, but it works for him and it helps him. And it's funny, and it's funny because it's a genuine part of his grieving process. It's funny because it's a good thing, and it's just the unexpectedness of that sort of thinking working for him. And I think the other thing to remember about intertwining humor and drama is that not only does misery frequently make humor funnier, but including humor in the dramatic moments makes the drama land much more strongly. So again, in that funeral episode, in the moments where the stranger, odder, quirkier things fall aside and we're just in the moment with a character who has lost someone they loved, that comes across so much more authentically, I hope, because we've seen them work through the stranger sides of their feelings and of the people they're dealing with and of themselves.
Hello, this is Owen McEwen, voice actor from New Jersey, USA, with some tips on making your listener laugh. If I could present one word that covers a lot of ground, the word would be contrast. So there's the contrast between what a character believes to be reality and what's actually happening. That makes me laugh. A good example of this is a scene in We're Alive when somebody's at the base and they say, well, don't worry, our people know what to do. And cut to Datu. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So that scenario is funny because it's a very strong contrast. Another great contrast is the extreme difference in circumstances. For example, a ridiculous person holds a serious position, or vice versa. So the mayor of Piffling Vale, for example, is a complete boob. Why is he in charge of anything at all? There's also the contrast of reaction to a situation. So a character might completely lose their mind over something silly, or handle utter catastrophe with nonchalance. There's also a contrast of expectation versus surprise. So this really engages the listener and actually manifests itself in another thing that makes the listener laugh, which is the running gag. So the once and future nerd has some moments when the high priest begins to talk, and you know that the conversation is going to turn toward bowel movements. You just don't know how gross it's going to be. Hadron Gospel Hour is wonderful at this, genius at this. We all know darn right well that Oppenheimer has no clue what that man's name is. You know, the guy, the half man stuck in the wall,
Cyrus.
Yes, excellent. We know it's coming, but we can't wait to hear the context. Will Cyrus be mad or just disappointed? Will the gang call the doc out? Product court pitches are also fabulous because we know it's going to be nonsense. But what kind of nonsense is it going to be this time? It's surprising. The Muppet Show was genius at the running gag. The movie Idiocracy is brilliant at the running gag. So you know these things are coming. How far will it go? So your expectations are rewarded, but they're rewarded with surprise. Running gags done well become inside jokes, and they make the listener feel like they're part of a club. There's a recent exchange that really stuck with me and made me laugh out loud. The show EOS 10 is a smart and funny show. It's got well-defined characters. One of the characters is Levi. He's always trying to get naked in front of other people. Dr. Ovidian is very deadpan in his delivery, but you know that he wants no parts of Levi's nudity. So the exchange goes like this. Dr. Ovidian is going to paint a portrait of Levi. So Levi says, I should let you know now that it is traditional that the royal family appear nude in official portraits. Dr. Ovidian responds, Is that right? It is. Remove one stitch of clothing and I will shoot you. Understood. Come now, stand over there. So if you follow the show, there you have the contrast of Ervidian's character as a painter. There's a whole episode devoted to that. You get the running gag of Levi trying to get naked. There's the expectation that Dr. Ovidian is not going to stand for it. But we are surprised by his response. It's an extreme threat of violence with a very calm, deadpan delivery. And then the portrait continues. There's lots of contrast there, and the listener is rewarded for being in the know enough to get the extent of the jokes. See, it's well written and funny, but it's extra hilarious when you follow the characters and you know the show.
Hi, I'm Vienna Yechko from the Vienna Yechko podcast. That's Vienna like the city, J-E-T like Jumbo Jet, S-C-H as in school, and K-O like knockout. And I'm not a comedy writer. I try to be funny, but I'm not. But I'm very much interested in the topic, and I try to get every advice I can get on the matter. And I found something very helpful in the Ditch Diggers podcast in episode 19. The title is Humor, and Mura Lafferty, one of the hosts, mentioned a book called The Hidden Tools of Comedy, which is going to be on my Christmas list this year. And she states, I think based on the reading of the book, that a reliable, continuous character that tries everything, even the most absurd things against all odds, is the best thing to drive comedy. And I think that's a very good advice I will pass on. And if you just think about the masters of comedy in the golden age, like Lauren Hardy or Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin, you will find this to be true, considering their movies and characters. And I think to sum this up, create a character, know them, know what motivates them, and throw them into a situation that's hopeless or absurd, and let them try to get out of it. Or give them an absurd, ridiculous, or unsolvable problem, and let them try to solve it anyway.
There was a lot of audio recorded and sent over to me from the recent New England Audio Dramatist Meetup, some of which I'm going to play on this episode, starting with this clip from Scott Hickey of the Gristmill.
One of the things audio has, it's a thing, because you can't see it, sometimes you can get away with seeing things, you know, doing certain kinds of jokes that you couldn't otherwise get away with. And I think that particular thing is something that can help you. If you're trying to be funny, I mean, a lot of the Burns and Allen and Jack Benny things, the whole punchline is they'll go on and on and on. And then you realize that, you know, he says, well, why are you wearing that bathing suit or something? And in the whole bit, you didn't realize that that was the case. And that's where the joke comes from, because you can't see it.
Hello, my name is David K. Barnes. I am the head writer and creator of the podcast sitcom Wooden Overcoats. And I wanted to talk today about ways of generating humor from characters, something which I found incredibly useful when I've been writing Wooden Overcoats and other programs. I find often that if you sit down and you say to yourself, I am writing comedy, I must be funny, every line must be funny, every idea must be intrinsically hilarious, that is actually incredibly limiting to creativity and usually induces panic and pulling hair out, etc. Also find that the scenes that you write don't tend to go anywhere. They end up just being a bit torturous to write, and you start questioning your abilities as a writer and human being. I find the best way is to sit down and say to yourself, I am writing a drama. Forget that it's meant to be funny. You can make it funny later if you need to sort of punch up jokes or whatever, put some in. But when you're writing the scene, you're creating characters, always say that you're just writing a drama. Because if you base a character on a joke, you'll find the joke is probably quite limiting, and that you'll only end up trying to find ways of crowbarring it in to episodes. The character won't grow or develop properly unless you allow that character to. Typically, a character based on a joke is going to end up turning into something else later on. It's much better when you are creating your characters to think of attributes. Better yet, think up problems. A problem that's at the heart of that character that really propels narrative action, that makes that character do things, which in itself is quite funny, but that's what you return to. So, as examples, a character in Wooden Overcoats who was based on a joke was one of the first introduced. There is a vicar, a reverend, Reverend Wavering, and his joke when introduced is that he is an agnostic. He doesn't know whether or not he believes in God, doesn't know which God he should be believing in, and he stops his services to have debates with the people around him on these topics. And it's, you know, I think quite an amusing joke. A lot of people have latched on to the agnostic vicar character. They really like that character. But as I was writing season one, and as I'm writing season two, the agnostic quality of him is something which, it's still there, but I found other things for the character to do. Because if I just kept returning to that one joke, it would run out of steam, the character wouldn't develop, wouldn't go anywhere. Two characters who I think have rather more to do, and I find it much easier to generate plots from, are the leads, Rudyard and Antigone, the two people, brother and sister, who run the funeral home. And what I did with them was to give them a problem each that they then had to deal with for the action of the series. Not just the idea of there is a rival funeral house across the street, which is what propels much of the action, but when you give a problem to a character, they can react in one of two ways. Either they can ignore the fact they have a problem entirely. They don't even realise that there is a problem. And they can see that there's something wrong in their lives, but they will address it in lots of really strange ways, which won't help and won't tackle the problem at all. In Wooden Overcoats, Rudyard Funn is a character that no one likes. He is arrogant. He is socially difficult. He doesn't really care about soothing people during funerals and that kind of thing. And yet he thinks that everybody else's problems with him lurk elsewhere. It's typically that the problem is everyone else. He refuses to change himself. He doesn't see himself as a problem. And as a result, he permanently struggles throughout the series to try and make himself a success. And yet he doesn't do any of the things which would actually help him, like becoming a better, more compassionate funeral director. And for me, that's where I generated all the humour for Rudyard. It's not specific jokes or catchphrases, though there are a few of those. It's more something intrinsic to that character that keeps bringing him up against all the other characters around him, his surroundings. Something inherently amusing. And inherently dramatic. So you can write serious scenes and funny scenes. His sister Antigone Funn, meanwhile, is very much aware that she is a socially awkward character. She's aware that there are problems. She's aware that she panics all the time. And she tries to push herself out there and do lots of new things. And sometimes that works. But more often than not, she just ends up scaring people or terrifying them or doing things wrong. The more she tries to address the problems within herself, the more she makes things worse for herself. In many ways. And that's where a lot of the humour for Antigone comes from. Sometimes she does succeed. She does go out there and do things correctly, and she gets her own way, just as Rudyard does sometimes. But more often than not, because it is a comedy, the characters fail. With Rudyard, he fails because he doesn't address the problem at the heart of his character. Antigone fails because she does address the problem at the heart of her character, but does it badly because she doesn't know how to do it any differently. And so for me, writing characters, creating scenes for the series, creating the series, finding that essential humour does not come from sitting down and saying, how do I make this funny? It's how do I create a dramatically interesting situation with characters battling something within themselves and the characters around them. How do I do that instead? And the best way is to stop thinking about jokes. Essentially, to be funny, stop trying to be funny. Come up with something dramatically interesting. And then give it a bit of a spin through language, for your own way of writing, but come up with something dramatically interesting and exciting, and an audience will get on board with that. And importantly, you will find it so much easier to write dialogue. That I find incredibly helpful.
Hi, I'm Chris Jarvis from www.radiotheatreworkshop.com. I'm writer-producer of the Elite Dangerous fan series Escape Velocity and the official Chaos Reborn full cast audio tie-in. How to make an audience laugh? I think it really depends on your kind of personal humour style. I mean, some people are quite dry, you know, in their humour, or some people have a more manic style. And I think the thing really comes down to the writing and, you know, your performers, and actually writing in a comedic way that is natural to you, that you're not trying to ape a particular style, that you actually kind of think, you know, what makes me laugh? And what makes other people laugh when I'm doing it, and kind of focus on that. I've never really set out to write comedy in particular. I kind of learned some years ago that I would write stuff that I considered I was writing quite straight, and then when I presented it to people, they would laugh at various points. So sometimes actually surprising me. And I think sometimes it comes down to your view of what you're presenting in your worldview. And I think sometimes, you know, people find your outlook funny. For me, I try and do things that are unexpected. I think the unexpected is always funny. When you surprise people, they tend to laugh. And I think in audio drama, you know, you can take a scenario where the audience can anticipate what's going to happen. And actually, if you preempt that, if you know what your audience is going to anticipate, and then you change the rules, that can give you a lot of humour. I think it's something that, you know, the sort of Joss Whedon style of writing has really typified. If you look at Buffy, a lot of that is about breaking conventions, about taking cliches that you expect to happen and then actually addressing those full on, calling them out. That can make people laugh. I think once you know your characters, it's easy to get an audience to go with you and laugh at character gags. The first episode of Friends I ever saw, I didn't even crack a smile. I couldn't understand why everyone was watching this show and raving about how funny it was. And admittedly, that first episode I saw was The Poker Game, which is, you know, arguably a weak episode. But I think once you're invested in the characters, jokes that rise out of their personality land much better. And you can, you know, again, it's about anticipation. The audience knows what's coming. If they know a character well and they see them in a particular situation, they can anticipate what's coming and they'll almost be laughing before you deliver the punchline.
This is Boyd Barrett, creator of Roswell, BC, before the crash. As both a producer and a consumer of audio drama, I love comedy, but giving tips on making your listener laugh is not easy. I think it's best in audio drama to not go for lots of knee-slap moments. The visual medium is a lot better suited for that. And most of the funny moments I enjoy in the shows I listen to are grin moments or maybe a light snicker moment. I rarely find myself laughing out loud at a line. What I think an audio drama should strive for is developing characters who just make you smile no matter what they say. That's easier in a series because you can build the character in such a way that the audience gets comfortable with an attitude or a quirkiness that character may have, and they can picture the body language of that character. And then sometimes you may stumble across characters who just write themselves into funny situations. Catchphrases or particular styles of speech can also be helpful in developing a funny character. If you do a continuing series like I do, that's written as it goes, you might find the way your voice actor says a particular phrase just fits the humor of his or her character. And if that happens, run with it. Roswell, BC is not what I would call a laugh-out-loud show, but I hope it brings grins and snickers to a lot of people. If it does, then I've done my job.
This is Casey Wayland, the writer-director of We're Live. My tips for making listeners laugh in audio drama. That's complicated. That's like asking a comedian, how are you funny? You have to kind of feel out jokes. You have to be incredibly comfortable in the scene and with the characters that you're working with as a writer. Because ultimately, it does come down to the writer that is supposed to write the joke, and then the actors can perform it. And then sometimes the actors can, you know, add in something else that can maybe be funny and work out that way. There's been a lot of jokes that I've had come off the cuff while working with actors in the studio, or just randomly they'll come up with, like, oh, hey, what can I say with this? You know, what else can I add in? And other times that can happen as well, the directors and things like that. You can always, laughs can sometimes happen on set, but when you are trying to write them, you have a little, it's hard. It's writing comedy is almost one of the hardest things that a person has to write, because it's incredibly easy to have a joke fall flat or not carry across with your audience. I I tend to write situational comedy, meaning that something in the situation warrants a joke, or they're having fun, or sometimes I just kind of go for the joke for me. If I find it funny and I'm going to laugh by it and I'm having a good time thinking about it and writing it, I hope the audience does too. And I think that's part of the writing process, is you have to enjoy what you're writing and you have to have fun with it. Because if you're not, if you don't think it's funny, if you don't think it's that people are going to get it, they probably won't. So trust your gut on that. But to make them laugh, just have fun. And let the jokes come from the situations and the characters, and don't try and force them in. Because the minute you try and force a joke in, it's like butting in a conversation with a knock-knock joke. It's just not going to work out the way you want it to.
Okay, let's head to Brazil now to hear from Danilo Battistini.
That's quite difficult for me, in my opinion, because on audio drama, you have to make some joke that you make your listener laugh, but he won't laugh like hysterically, so he'll lose sight of what's going on in your audio drama. But mainly, I think that a good dialogue's the best tip for comedy, if to make your listener laugh, or given that, okay, so he thinks it's funny, but he's not losing attention because he wants to pay more attention to it. So I mainly think that it's dialogue, purely dialogue. Depending on the content that you're creating, maybe you have something like some translation, mistranslation stuff like, Oh, okay, that's right, you're right, you know? So like, one of your characters understanding what the other character is saying, but you can't understand it, so... at least, I don't know, I think that's funny, so... That's some tip that I have for making listeners laugh. It's not my ideal ground, because I do more thriller and horror stuff than actually comedy, but... as a tip, listen to Hadrian Gospel Hour. It's amazing. That makes me laugh.
And speaking of Hadron Gospel Hour, here's Rich Wentworth.
So how do we make listeners laugh? What are some tips for making listeners laugh? Well, in Hadron Gospel Hour, we start out with characters that are very particular, characters that have particular character flaws or strengths, and we're constantly sort of pitting them against the things that they'd prefer not to do, the things that are outside of their comfort zone, and explore what that produces within those characters. So, for instance, you've got a guy like Oppenheimer, who is not a very social person, as we find out very early on, and we tend to try to put him into situations where he has to communicate with other people, usually large groups of people, and you know, hilarity ensues because he's just not very good at it. Creating characters that have humorous foibles right off the bat helps us out. The way we write our situations, because we're kind of a hybrid of a sitcom and a serialized show, there's character arcs, but there's parts of the characters that do not change, and that, you know, that kind of creates that level of, I guess, in the character's frustration, but for us, the audience, amusement. Most of the humor that we write comes out of characters and the way that they're going to relate in certain situations. You know, yeah, we do pop culture references a lot. Part of the humor for us is making each other laugh, Mike and I. So for Hadron, we'll often try to do slapstick or visual comedy that people can't see, obviously. And so there's a lot of no, to the left, to the right, that recurs often in our show that we get a kick out of. And I think that might actually communicate to the listener as well. You know, so some of our humor is actually playing with the medium and playing against what the medium's strengths are. In a kind of a slightly meta way. But yeah, those are, I think every show, every narrative is going to have its own source for comedy. I think character is always going to be there for people. Just basically the way that your show is set up, the way that your story is structured, there's going to be opportunities for humor all over the place. I think that's one of the things that's great about humor is you can have it pop up in a very, very dramatic situation. If it's natural to the characters, if it serves the story, and if it helps at points to maybe blow some steam out of what might be a hard scene or story for people to take. You know, for us, it's part of the fabric of our multiverse, so we can't do without it.
Now let's hear from Yarn Sacks Arising creator Lindsay Harris-Friel.
My tip for making listeners laugh: your story's action sets up audience expectations. It provides a question or a train of thought, and then it pays it off. And in comedy, that payoff is a reward. How you pay it off is what makes it more or less funny. Do you exceed the audience's expectations? Is the setup and payoff woven intricately into the plot? Is there a lot of plot action between the setup and payoff? Is there a little bit?
This is all too weird.
Your first massacre. We should have a toast.
No, I don't feel
Take the horn, drink. For the souls of the slain and the living, forever changed.
Oh God, this smells like a spiced punch in the face.
Many Utans worked hard to fill those barrels. You must not disgrace their labor.
Ooh. Let me have some more.
Hi, I'm Christopher Green, and I work on the audio dramas Shadows and Daylight and The Jimmy, Sam, and Tommy Show, which can be found at shadowsanddaylight.ca and jimmysamandtommy.weebly.com, respectively. For me, making listeners laugh is about giving them something unexpected enough that they don't see it coming, but relatable enough that its randomness doesn't detract focus from the joke. Of course, in comedy, you want something to be unexpected and off the wall, but at the same time, it has to be consistent enough in style with the rest of the show that you're not too confused. If the audience is sitting there confused about what just happened, they're not going to get the joke. So there's a real balance, especially to wacky humor. In the Jimmy, Sam, and Tommy show, it's established that there's some really wacky kind of stuff that goes on. So when something really random happens to the characters, while it's unexpected, it's still somewhat expected within the context of the show. So you don't know exactly what unexpected thing is going to happen, but you're expecting the unexpected because it's framed within the context of the style of the show. If it's out of character with the show, then you're just going to confuse the audience and they're not going to get the joke. Shadows and Daylight is a mystery show, and so it doesn't have as much comedy. But even in a serious show, you need some comedy relief. So in this case, the unexpected is actually a lot easier. You don't have to do some grandiose, ridiculous, wacky thing because they're not expecting any humor at all in the first place. However, because of this, you have to establish these lighthearted moments early on. Otherwise, if you start introducing too much humor to alleviate the situation, it's just going to feel corny and kind of shoehorned in after the fact. My advice for adding levity to something, whether it's a comedy or a serious show where you want some comedic relief, is to just listen to other shows that you like that do humor well in the style you want to. Especially in the case of serious shows, look for examples of shows that are serious and try and pick out the humorous moments. Listen and take notes for how they keep the balance. Just like the balance of the mix for your audio drama, when you're mixing different volumes for sound effects, dialogue, and music, you need to keep a balance in your writing too. It's just as important. Ultimately, it's all got to flow cohesively within the character of the script and the character of the overall series, or you're only going to end up distracting people.
It's back to the New England meetup now to catch up with Eli McElveen of Alba Salix Royal Physician.
I realized not too long ago that in Alba, there's a kind of humor that I use fairly often, which is like a fantastical situation that turns out to have kind of mundane or familiar rules. So you've got a witch running a clinic in a fairy tale world, and healing people. And that's sort of a wacky experience that none of us have had. But if people are walking in and they've got to, you know, fill out a form on a clipboard like they would in a hospital or a doctor's office on Earth, that starts to become funny because we're seeing rules that are unexpectedly applying from our our everyday experience in this weird situation. I've been reading this book by Steve Kaplan called The Hidden Tools of Comedy, and he has a similar kind of idea that I think he calls the metaphorical relationship, where he's talking about the classic example is The Odd Couple, where they're just roommates, basically, but they're behaving like a bickering married couple. And where you've got a relationship of one kind that is playing out as though it's a relationship of a completely different kind. And it's the same sort of thing where you've got one set of rules kind of overlaid on top of another. So the expectations are there. But it's kind of the linking of those two things that's surprising and funny.
Up next, it's Zachary Fortis-Gom of The Orphans.
So how do you make your listener laugh? In The Orphans, it's very much a drama. There are light moments, there are moments of comedy, but those moments of comedy aren't throughout the show. That's not what it's about. But they're so incredibly important to a drama. If you want people to relate to your characters, you can't just show them in constant fear. They have to smile, they have to laugh, they have to be kind. So there are moments peppered out through the show of comedy and people laughing and actually having fun together that really help build the characters. So people who think that they're just doing drama, pay attention. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of funnier people than me who can tell you all about writing comedy. I don't necessarily write comedy. But what I do is I write what I think is funny, what's funny to me, and then I allow my actors to take that and build upon it. So much of the comedy in The Orphans comes from the people who are in the roles. Because during our casting process, we were very lucky to find funny, humorous people in their everyday life who were able to bring in that comedy into their characters. So I remember a scene with Jeffrey, Valerie, and William, for those of you who've listened to The Orphans, where they were carrying Will, who had just been injured, and they were teasing him, and they were teasing him about how, you know, he's this big, strong guy and he's been hurt. That we were very lucky that the actors who inhabited all three of those roles were incredibly funny people. So when we came to record that scene, I said, look, this is the script as it's written. Now take it and go further with it. Let's be funny. They each brought in their own sense of humor, their own wit, and they kind of bit into the scene. And we had a million different takes of that, and we ended up choosing the best one and creating a scene off of that. So really what I'm saying is that comedy isn't just to you as a creator. It's also down to your actors, to your performers, to your editors, even on choosing which takes to go for, because something may be more funny than the others. Oftentimes, if you are having trouble with comedy, it might be because your performers aren't hitting the right tone of comedy. It might just also be writing, but take into account if you need someone to be funny, are they a genuinely funny person? Like, why don't you bring them in on your writing? Why don't you allow them to improvise? Because comedy doesn't only come from writing, it comes from people. So if you try to craft the funniest scene you think you possibly could, you might end up writing something that's really not funny at all because there's no personality to it. You have to let people bring themselves into comedy to make others laugh. If someone else can make you laugh, then you know it works. If you can make someone else laugh, then you know it works. People are the key to comedy.
Back to the New England meetup once again, then. Here's Brian Bristol from You Are Here.
I feel like a lot of the stuff that really gets belly laughs out of people is stuff that I find genuinely funny. So I usually write to try to entertain myself. In You Are Here, we have some pop culture movie clips and stuff that play through the AI speakers. So a lot of times I have songs and stuff that, like anybody else, song clips, movie clips that pop in your head in certain situations. So where normally I would keep those shut up in my brain, I have the AI put those clips through the speakers, and that's gotten a lot of laughs.
Here's Wes Lamb now, the creative force behind The Adventures of Mecha Betty.
Comedy is the sign of the ridiculous. Actually, I can't hold this accent for very long because it's stupid. All right, so basically when I suggest a you know, working with comedy, especially with audio drama, is that you're not working with actors that, you know, people can physically see. You can't rely on subtle facial expressions or, you know, a wink or a nod or anything like that. You have to come across that entirely through audio, which means that, like, sometimes you have to make people act a little bit more zany or something than that, than you're used to. You need to be able to get the entire joke across through just audio. And the thing is that you have a lot of tools in your belt, and, like, you can use music, you can use tone, you can use the actors, you know, kind of voicing out their feelings and stuff like that, because, you know, this is audio only, so I'm like, you gotta be able to have that impact come across. I guess the best example I can think of, like, of my own work would be in The Adventures of Mecha Betty. There's a scene where Ensign Barkley is just going down the hallway, he's singing a song, it's like, you know, everything's going great, do 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 do, and then, like, all of a sudden you start hearing some grunting and vaguely sexual sounds in the hallway, and then, like, you know, cheesy, almost porn-like mood music starts playing, and he's just, like, hearing this through the door, which you can hear based off of the echo, that's a small room, so that, unlike that, gives the audience a good feel of what's going on, even though it's completely different from what they think. And he's just going, like, oh man, go, go, oh man, go. And then he ends up, like, bursting open the door because he has to go collect them for a mission. And it's like, oh wait, you have your clothes on. And it's just like all that build up to that one joke. But because you can get a feel for the scene, you get a feel for how the actors would look in that situation, it ends up being quite hilarious. Actually, I think I should go ahead and put the example in here.
Gonna go get Betty, gonna train real good, gonna not let anything ruin my mood. Oh, what do we have here now? Well, as a gentleman, it'd be quite rude to eavesdrop. Good thing I'm no gentleman.
Nice! Congratulations,
Big
Kenny. Yeah, push it in harder.
Are you sure? It's already pretty tight.
Come on, Kenny, you can do it.
No! That's fun.
Go, man, go!
What was that?
It doesn't matter. Just keep going.
Oh, just let me know if it hurts.
I will, just keep going.
O'Connell and Bloom did say to get them right away, but did they mean right away, right away? I could respect their privacy, but orders are orders. Oh, Betty, I hope it's not a bad time for me to... Oh, you're still dressed, okay.
Ugh, what the hell, Barkley? Why wouldn't we have clothes on?
No reason. You need a hand putting your hands on there, though.
Barkley, what are you even doing here?
Hey guys, this is Jacob Haycock and Daniel Haycock.
Hello, everyone.
And we are the creators and co-producers of Don Clark, a audio drama comedy. We're here to discuss your guys' first question on what do you do to make people laugh? And I'm really going to turn it to Dan to talk about, because he's the writer of Don Clark, or The Adventures of Don Clark. So when you're writing, Dan, what do you do to make people laugh?
So I've been writing comedy now for 10 years, or trying to, I should say. And most of the time, I would say that the, you know, a writer's only as good as his audience or his editor. So I try out jokes all the time with you or with people at work. And most of it is just tangents of things that, you know, I see throughout the day, or someone at a red light that won't make a left-hand turn, things like that. But the biggest thing is that we came up with a concept, Don Clark.
Yep.
So you said the name Don Clark, and I thought that is the most perfect superhero name ever, mainly based off of my favorite superhero, Clark Kent, a.k.a. Superman, a.k.a. Kal-El, last son of Krypton. Anyway, And we just kind of spiraled from there. You and I just spent a lot of late nights coming up with random scenarios while walking to Shell gas station.
So what do you do, though, specifically when you're writing that, like when you're writing a joke, how do you know it's going to make somebody laugh?
See, I guess, again, I would go back to the joke's only as good as it's as the editor, or the writer's only as good as its editor, because most of the jokes I write, I don't know if they're going to be over-the-top funny or not until you read it and you come back to me saying that's awesome, or I have other people reading saying that's awesome. But I would say just try a whole bunch of different jokes. You know, come up with a main theme for what you want, which we came up with Don Clark is the world's worst investigator. And then it was, okay, well, how? How is he the worst investigator? And we built on that of, well, one time he arrested an electrician for tampering with wires in his backyard, and they thought that, or he thought that it was a hacker. Or he wouldn't let people on planes for fear of being them being terrorists. You know, just normal topical stuff that we see every day that we're like, how can we make this over the top ridiculous to the point that it has to be laughable?
And I mean, like, your process is like you'll write for a while and then I'll read it. And we'll go back and forth and actually kind of act it out.
Yeah.
To see if it's applicable in our story. If we're having a hard time getting through the script because we're laughing so hard, I usually think that that's going to be a good sell.
Right. And I'll never spend too long on one joke.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if there's the main concept that you want to get across, try it out, see if it works. However, actually backpedaling a little bit, making sure that you develop your characters is a big thing, because then you kind of want to know what style of comedy they have, like where Don Clark is just the most ignorant person, and then Sergeant Tully is kind of this guy who rings him in, and he's the one that you would mostly connect to, where you're like, am I just this logical man in a world of fools, and am I the only one that can see it? And so really it comes from like taking something from an outrageous standpoint and a logical standpoint at the same time.
I agree with that, though, like, because Tully's kind of our ground.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one that people are going to be like, okay, so I'm not the only one that thinks this is absolutely ridiculous.
Right, he's this poor man. He's like if Mr. Wilson was on the police force from Dennis the Menace, and Dennis just grew up to become a detective without taking any exam. And just started taking cases, because why not?
And I have to say, like, from when it comes to afterwards recording and then producing the spot, a lot of the things that make me laugh are the offhanded, like, the off-script things that people say. And I find a way to work those in. You know, like, I think one of our lines is, like...
Oh, I know it like I know the size of my own member.
Well, yeah, well, yeah. The line, that was completely improv.
Right.
And, you know, Tully's response is like...
And you're basing this off what?
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, ruler. Of course. No, and that's the other thing. Like, don't be afraid to experiment. You know, yeah. Go off script a little bit. Those times, I think we'd been recording for a couple hours. We were tired. It was really hot because our studio has no air conditioning whatsoever. So, you know, we got to keep all the sound out of everything. So it was just this really hot room. We're like, you know what? Let's do this one free base. We know some of the lines. Let's just see where we go with it.
So, but overall, Matt, Robert, thanks so much for the show. We really appreciate it. It's helped us out a bunch.
Love your work.
Yeah, we really love your work.
And everyone else out there, I can't wait to hear what you have. You know, it's a trial and error basis. So you try it out. If it doesn't work, you try something new. Nothing's ever going to be perfect the first time.
I think another thing is, like, nothing's ever going to be completely original, you know, but don't be afraid of that.
Yeah.
You know, the whole point that we came up with Don was because my teacher, Don Clark, said, if you copy something once, it's cheating. If you do it multiple times, it's research. But the Rednickism is steal shamelessly.
Right. We kind of took bits and pieces from different genres or different storylines or, you know, homages to different things that we liked, and we just made it our own.
Okay, let's finish up by heading back to the New England meetup where Bill DeVries and Fred Greenhalgh were talking not just about making your listener laugh, but making them feel emotions in general.
You know, everything's played for real. When I'm working with our actors, Fred will attest to this, we go through a number of takes until I get really the read that really resonates with me. To the point where when we were actually working on Lock and Key, there were two instances where for one where the mom was having this breakdown, and she and the son, she had the urn of her husband's ashes that had just gone tumbling and crashed all over the floor, and she's blaming him. She's completely drunk, and he's like in her face, and then he starts crying, and it was so intense. And I was right there, and Fred's got the microphone, and I'm right there, and the two of them right there, and tears are just welling up. I was in the scene with them. Another one with the son and this girl that he had a real crush on. She says, "Yeah, you got to get rid of that hat, and if you do, I'll make it worth your while." And he just immediately went, "Done." And I'm right there. And as soon as he said that, I just, that's great. So, oh God, I'm sorry. Oh God, we got to do it over again, because I was right in there. I was so part of it. But it's the reality of it. You know, it's playing it for, you know, the way we choreograph and the way we structure our recording sessions is that we do, you know, we steer away from, you know, the static presence in front of a microphone. And, you know, we work actors around with each other. They're engaged with each other. They're acting with each other. I mean, they're, you know, grappling, embracing, what have you, so that there's that sense of cinema verite that it's really happening. So it liberates the actor as well, that they can be more, you know, part of that reality that we're trying to create. So when it comes to fear, humor, what have you, it's what they actually bring.
Well, and then there are stakes. Like, mm-hmm. You only are afraid because you give a shit about what's happening.
Yeah.
So if you go to movie theater, the only two types of movies where you hear a reaction from the audience are a comedy and a horror movie. Mm-hmm. And every other movie, people just sort of watch it. You know, so that I think, at least in the Stephen King household, there's a sort of ethos that comedy and horror are actually kind of tied together. And Joe Hill said similar things to us. Like, he sort of expressed to us when they worked on Lock and Key that one thing he really, you know, felt flat about many other works is when a work of horror is only a work of horror, it only sort of hits one note. And they really worked hard that Lock and Key would have all these different things. It's like, it's a horror story, it's a love story, it's a teenage thing, it's demons, it's comedy. And so there was all of this elements in it, but it wasn't just punchlines. And so I'm not like, you know, Jack and Benny type radio drama where we're trying to like make a bunch of jokes, a bunch of falling out of the closet, which I think is great, and gaffes and all that are a big part of what radio, and there's people could probably speak to that better than me. But where there's humor, I sort of find like I do like to talk about serious things, and humor is a human coping mechanism that comes is a product of, you know, horrible things that go down. And so that's part of, to me, why Lock and Key was such a wonderful source material, why I was like, when Bill said, "Yeah, do you want to do Lock and Key as an audio drama?" I'm like, "Yes." Like, are you kidding me? And like, I literally did not believe that it was actually going to be anywhere near a possibility of becoming a reality, because it was this story that had these elements of, at the core, it's a story about family struggling to make it through all the shit we all have to deal with, just with, you know, superimposed with demons and magical keys and all this, but then also a huge amount of humor. So I think, whether it's horror, whether it's comedy, the goal is to have there be stakes. Like, something has to be at risk. Like, if you can make it through your scene and no one really cares about the outcome of that scene sucks.
Thank you, Fred. I think that's a great segue into our next episode, which is all about how to scare your listener. And based on Bill and Fred's excellent adventure there, maybe the two aren't so dissimilar after all. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did, though. A massive thanks to all our wonderful contributors. I'll have links to their works in the show notes over at audiodramaproduction.com, and that's the very website where you'll find a list of our other 97 episodes as well. Thank you very much for listening, and if you remember to hit that subscribe button, I'll see you the very minute we release that next episode. Cheerio.